യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദ്യകേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ ക്രമാത് വിവരണസ്യ ച. സോ വി ആർ കണ്ടിന്യൂവിങ് ദ ഡിസ്കഷൻ ഓൺ പ്രാണായാമ, one of the important items in Ashtanga Yoga. So we discussed asanam, sthira sukham asanam, we already discussed. So one of the important characteristic of being established in a posture is called asana siddhi is yatna uparama siddhyati asanam, means we are able to sit in a steady, relaxed posture where there is complete cessation of any effort. That effortlessness is the central point in any yogic posture. Yog posture here means the posture that we sit on for meditation, not yoga, hatha yoga exercises. So that should be kept clearly in mind. We have to repeat that again. Asana, according to Patanjali's system, is only the ability to sit for a long time in a state of perfect tranquility, peace, and also in a very comfortable manner for a long time. Now, how do we combine comfort, steadiness, uprightness of the body, that means the sushumna, neck and head, backbone, neck and head, and longevity? So one should be able to sit for a long time. You can sit for a long time only if there is saukhyam, that means sira sukham asanam. Saukhyam means a state of perfect comfort. Now comfort again is related to effortlessness. If there is effort, there is no comfort. If there is comfort, there is no effort. If there is effort, there is no naturalness. If there is effort, there is always, that is called what we call strain. That is called prayatna. Prayatna means effort. In actual practice, the commentators say shaking of the body is completely stopped. That's the idea behind. Now, of course, this we will discuss again. The 48th sutra says tataha dundu anabhighata. We already discussed this, so no need to repeat again. So when you are fully established in that effortlessness, that is called prayatna shaithilya, it's mentioned here in the 47th verse. I'm going fast because we discussed very elaborately all these important topics in the last and the previous class. So prayatna shaithilya ananta samapatti, that is the 47th verse. Prayatna shaithilya also means complete freedom from any effort. Effortlessness is a clue and a key to mastery in anything. If you work very hard to get something, it only means that you are not a master in that area. Anything that you have mastered should be an effortless, something effortless for you. But there is no need for you to put up any effort. So this also we discussed. In the 49th verse, there is a definition of pranayama. That also we completed, but I just repeat. I'm going to repeat just once. Shwasa prashwasa yoho gadi vichedaha pranayama. Pranayama means this regulation of breath, pranayama, it comes when you get fully established in posture, asana. And what is the pranayama? Swasa prasvasayoho gati vichedaka. That's a very important point to be kept in mind, because frequently when we read the original scriptures and yoga philosophy, you find a little difference with regard to the real meaning and implication of the word pranayama as used and explained in the Hatha Yoga scriptures and also Patanjali's system. So Patanjali's system says complete suspension of the movement of breath. No inhalation, no exhalation. That is called swasa prasvasayoho gati vichedaka. Swasa means purega, which means inhaling, you breathe in. That is stopped. And rechaga means exhaling, that is prasvasa, that is also stopped. Please, those of you who may not may be coming for the first time, you can listen to the previous class where we discussed all this in details, or ask questions at the end of the session. The third one is kumbhaka. So kumbhaka is the, kumbhaka means stopping of the breath. Neither exhalation nor inhalation. This is what we are going to discuss in the next few sutras. So Patanjali says that gati vichedaha means complete suspension of breath. It could be suspension of the breath after inhaling, which is called antakumbhaka, or exhaling, where you exhale but don't breathe in. It is called bahikumbhaka, external or internal. Now, according to Patanjali's system, inhaling and exhaling is not pranayama. But without acquiring mastery in regulated breathing in and breathing out, inhaling and exhaling, one cannot really practice suspension of the breath. That is kumbhaka. That is very important. That's why in a very broad sense, all these three are included in what we normally understand the word pranayama in the normal yoga context, which is mostly based on the teachings of Hatha Yoga Pratibhiga, Gheranda Samhita and Shiva Samhita, which are three of the few books which are normally studied by those who specialize on Hatha Yoga, physical exercise part of it. So this is what we are going to discuss in the next few sutras. So what pranayama is? So one should be very careful to distinguish pranayama as understood in the Hatha Yoga context and also in Patanjali system. In Hatha Yoga context, breathing in, inhalation, and breathing out, exhalation, and also suspension of the breath, together are maybe called pranayama. But Patanjali says only stopping of breath is pranayama. That is swasa prasvasayoho gati vichedaka. Gati means movement. Vichedaka means stopping. So that is pranayama. But again, there is certainly a great significance in the Hatha Yogin's concept of pranayama, because without mastering the technique of breathing in and breathing out in a very regulated, measured manner, it is impossible and also it is dangerous, harmful for anyone to practice suspension of the breath. So that's the significance of inhalation and exhalation. Now we are going to the 50th sutra. That's we discussed all the sutras up to 49th in the last session. This is the new sutra that we are going to deal with. Bahya abhyantara stambha vrittihi ദേശകാല സംഖ്യാഭി പരിദൃഷ്ട ദീർഘസൂക്ഷ്മ. ദിസ് ഈസ് ദി 50th സൂത്ര. സോ ത്രീ ടൈപ്സ് ഓഫ് പ്രാണായാമ are mentioned here. In other words, three types of suspension of breath, stopping of breath are mentioned here. One is external operation. The other is internal. So, and the third one is, of course, a state where both this internal and external operations are simultaneously stopped, not transcended. Transcending comes in the fourth type of pranayama that will be discussed in the 51st sutra. So now this pranayama is discussed. So this is first of all the three steps. First pranayama is bahya, external, stopping breath after exhalation is called bahya kumbhaka, wherever there is stopping, it always means kumbhaka. So kumbhaka itself has got a great significance here. Kumbha means, you know, it is a pot. Now, if you keep water in a pot, the water remains steady without any movement. So that steadiness, that complete absence of distraction or movement, that is implied in the very word that is used in Sanskrit to mean what we normally understand suspension of breath or stopping of breath. That is called kumbhaka pranayama. Kumbhaka, kumbha means pot. Kumbhaka means something that is contained in the pot. So if you take water from the ocean or a river and you fill the pot and keep it there for some time, the difference is that the water outside in the ocean is always moving. There's a lot of distraction, ripples, waves, and so on. But water within the pot is steady. There is no movement. So that steady, peaceful, tranquil aspect of the water contained in the kumbha, kumbham, it's kumbha, means pot, is implied by the word kumbhaka vritti. Vritti means the dimension of prana, that is vritti. So when the prana takes that particular dimension, then it is called kumbhaka vritti. Here again, I have to repeat what I said in the last class. This should be interesting. Prana and breath are not the same. Prana means energy. The entire cosmos is pervaded by energy. And this energy in this relative phenomenal world is the same. There is no increase, no decrease. It remains the same. But the way this energy operates in different beings may be different. So the most visible, the grossest dimension or the most visible dimension of that prana is breath. So if you can control the breath, in a way that's a beginning of controlling prana. It's like you've heard of the story, Swamiji uses as an illustration in his maybe introduction to Raja Yoga lectures. So that drives home this idea. It's taken again from Yoga Vasishtha. Now Swamiji gives the example. You know, a king had a minister who somehow fell from his grace. So the minister was excommunicated from the kingdom, and he was kept in a tower, a prison. So for several years he was sentenced, and it was practically, it was not due to any serious crime, but somehow due to some misunderstanding, the king got angry with his minister and excommunicated him and put him on a tower, in the tower, the top floor of the tower. But his wife was a very clever person. So he knew that, so he sent a message to his wife somehow to bring a very thin cotton thread, then a strong rope, and again a much stronger twine, and also some honey. And you know the little tiny creature that goes after the smell of the honey. So all these were brought. So then he instructed his wife to tie all these together. So the thin cotton thread was tied to the horns of the little creature, and a few drops of honey were pasted on the horns. He can never get it, he can never eat it, but the smell was so attractive. And then the king, the minister instructed his wife to keep the whole thing at the bottom of the tower. So the little creature slowly started climbing upward, attracted by the smell and the taste of the honey drops on its horns, but he can never get it. But he'll be moving up, chasing it, going after it, expecting after some time, he may be able to get it. But as it moved forward, behind this creature, the cotton thread, and behind a rope, and behind a strong twine, and behind it maybe something much stronger. So all these finally reached the tower, the top floor of the tower. And the minister caught hold of the little creature, and they slowly caught hold of the strong twine. And with the help of that, he came down. He got liberation. So Patanjali's system implies that we can get liberation if we can control prana. So here the breath is like that little cotton thread that is tied to the feet of the little creature. We cannot tie the huge twine. You can tie only little thread. So slowly move upward. So if we can control and regulate our breath, then we will be able to control our personality, our character. We can easily imagine when we get angry, breathing system is irregular. And when we are upset, then also. And also when we suddenly get a tragic news for some time, it is suspended. When we suddenly hear something very happy, $1 trillion, $1 billion suddenly you have got, that also can make us, for a minute, for a few seconds, we may lose. We may stop breathing. So that is stambha. But remember, it is different from yogic suspension of breath. If that suspension of breath is attained through proper yogic practice, then it is protective. It will have an impact on our personality. We become yogi. So anyway, this is the point, remember. So now we come back to the sutra. So the 50th sutra, as I mentioned, Bahya Abhyantara Stambha Vruttihi Deshakala Sankhya Bhihi Paridrishtaha Dirgha Sukshmaha. So three types of pranayama are mentioned here as a prelude to a discussion on the fourth and the highest one. First, stopping breath after after exhaling. That's called Bahya Kumbhaka. I mean, not to inhale for some time, not inhaling. That is one. The second one is Abhyantara Vritti, stopping of breath after inhaling. That is called Antakumbhaka. That means you don't exhale for some time. Now, the third one is this, suspension of this. And when you practice this, observing time and space, slowly this kumbhaka becomes subtle, long, and you get established in it. That's called dirgha sukshma. So first, the external, stopping a breath after exhalation, not inhaling for some time, then internal manifestation of the same breath, stopping a breath after inhaling, that's called antakumbhaka, not exhaling for some time. And then getting established in this, that is neither external nor internal. It is called sammyak kumbhaka. So it is neither bahya kumbhaka, external suspension of breath, or antakumbhaka, or internal suspension of breath. But in between, when the breath is stopped by single effort, so Vyasa calls it nasakrita prayatnat, means by a single effort. Now this is the third kumbhaka. Now Vyasa wants to give an illustration to drive home this idea. So he gives the example. Suppose you have a hard surface and you drop some water drops. Then what happens? That water drop gets quickly dried up. The drying process takes place from all sides. It's not just by slow degrees. That means the drying process is a comprehensive one. The process of drying the water drops, it happens simultaneously. That's the example Vyasa gives. So, yatha tapte nyastam upale jalam sarvada sangojam abadhyeda tatha duyoho yugabad bhavati abhavaiti. This Vyasa commentary. So, duyoho yugabad bhavati. Duyoho means the cessation of external and internal suspension of breath, or absence of both this abhyantara and bahya, external and internal suspension of breath, takes place. This is called the third kumbhaka. It is called sagrita prayatna, means with one single effort. This is again not the highest, but this is certainly an advanced state. Now, when these three types of pranayama, when it becomes prolonged, then what happens? Then it becomes the highest. These three types are, of course, regulated by space, time, and number. That's what the desha, kala, sankhya. Desha here means certain parts of the body, called Vyasa called sharirasthana, means certain types of breathing exercises. A kumbhaka can help you to acquire tremendous mental powers. For example, when we can concentrate this suspense with the suspension of breath, if you can concentrate the mind on certain things, mind becomes a tremendous sharp weapon. Otherwise, if you don't practice the mind and yoga, Our mind is like a very blunt knife. We cannot cut anything with that. Yogic practices give the mind certain power, subtle faculties. There are many examples. You may have heard of one incident, one episode from Vivekananda's life. To give an example, you know, Swami Vivekananda could read something and understand things immediately and retain in his mind. You find people who can do that. People who attain great things, either in art, science, or music. When they're doing all these things, if you call them, you find that you cannot disturb them. Their mind is completely focused on that. Now, normally what happens when we do something, any work, our mind will be dragged to the street by the ears when we hear the sound of vehicles moving in the street. Again, when you see an object in front of you, part of the mind is drawn towards the visual object. And also, if you are sitting on the desk, if you are pressing the desk strongly while talking, that means the person is, his mind is not fully on the subject he is discussing. Part of the mind, mental energy, is distracted and diverted towards the object which he is touching. So these are called, you know, the five senses of perception. Drag the mind in their direction. And if there is a smell coming from the street, smoke or something, you feel you are reading a very serious book preparing for examination, you say, well, there is a terrible smoke coming from, I cannot read it. It means you are not reading actually. Part of the mind was busy enjoying or suffering the smoke or the smell coming from the other side. You should not make noise because I want to study. What does it mean? He can concentrate on his study only if there is no noise. Now, through the practice of yoga or any exercise of human mind, you will be able to withdraw this mind from all these external things, all external temptations, external visual, audio, objects, things that could distract you through smell, touch, or sight, or sound, or whatever may be. If you can withdraw the mind from all these, then mind becomes a subtle power. Now, a person who has reached this third state of Kumbhaka, and also the fourth state, sorry, the third state especially, that person will be able to focus his mind completely on object, on a single object. So at one stage, they can cure diseases from their body. May not be cancer or heart problems, but many of the minor problems, especially those related to psychosomatic problems, can be cured by concentrating the mind on the particular aspect that is affecting your health. So this is one important aspect mentioned here. So in the third pranayama, it becomes long and it becomes subtle. So the example is given. A very hot surface, a few drops of water, the water gets dried up. Similarly, the external and internal suspension of breath stop, the breath itself reaches a level of complete suspension where there is no constant inhaling and exhaling. Otherwise, it's a practice. You have to concentrate for certain matras, time units on external suspension, or there is Bahya Kumbhaka or internal suspension, Antha Kumbhaka. There are different measurements which yoga teachers will give you clear direction. Otherwise, it could be harmful. But the third stage, this limitation of time, space, and number, all these are transcendent. So there is really no rechaga, no puraga, no inhalation, no exhalation in the third state of pranayama. Now in the 51st sutra, there is a discussion of the fourth or the highest pranayama, which really transcends both the external and internal. Transcends, it is not just suspension or stoppage of both external and internal suspensions, but it transcended. There is a difference between absence and transcendence. Absence, if something is absent in you, it doesn't mean that it will never occur to you again. When you transcend it, then it is within your control to come back to the same level which you transcended. So there is a difference between absence and transcendence. Transcendence is the real going beyond transcending. So that is explained here. Bahi abhyendra vishyakshepi chaturthaka. Chaturtha means the fourth one. So the fourth pranayama is defined here. It transcends the spheres of both external and internal pranayama. Means external and internal suspension of breath. So that word should be understood. Pranayama in Patanjali system always refers to stopping of breath, suspension of breath. It doesn't mean exhalation or inhalation. So that should be understood all the time. Now, this is a very, very famous and very important sutra in the Patanjali system, especially in the context of pranayama. There are different authors like, Ramananda Saraswati, who wrote Maniprabha, Bhoja, Svrutti, and again Sadasivayendra Saraswati, Yoga Sutagara, and of course the most prominent of the commentaries, that Vyasa's Bhashyam, and of course the super commentary of Shankaracharya, Bhashya Vivaranam. So there are different schools of thought. We had to remember one thing. This is only for intellectual discussion. In actual practice, what we have to keep in mind is the fourth pranayama, the highest pranayama, goes beyond, transcends all other three types of pranayama, where yogi is able to reach the level of samadhi. So that can be explained in the context of Sri Ramakrishna's life. Now, according to certain teachers, and this view is very, very popular. One is Yoga Sudhagara, that is a Sadasivendra Saraswati. According to him, the fourth pranayama is a natural regulation of breath that takes place automatically and simultaneously in the higher samadhi, when the yogi transcends, goes beyond consciousness of this external empirical world. And mean he transcends the relative world. So this is the natural suspension or regulation of breath, pranayama, which takes place when a yogi reaches the highest. Samadhi, the eighth anga, Ashtanga Yoga, Samadhi is the eighth one, the highest. So according to Yoga Sudhagara, this well-known, just well-known interpretative work on Patanjali system by Sadasivendra Saraswati. The highest and fourth pranayama happens, or it is simultaneously, it takes place only when you reach samadhi, in which you transcend the level of empirical relative world and consciousness. This is the one view. But maybe with a different perspective, Vyasa gives another interpretation, which essentially is not very different from this view. Because if you say the pranayama takes you to the highest samadhi, then pranayama is the same as dhyanam. Before dharana, dhyanam, and these two states, if you reach samadhi state, then pranayama itself is enough. So Vyasa says there is another kind of fourth state of this pranayama, which is not exactly what happens in samadhi, which is a few steps below. So he says it's just transcending. So he says, chadurthastu shwasa prashwasayohu vishyavadharana kramena bhumijayat ubhayapeksha purvago gitya bhavaha chadurtha. This is Vyasa's commentary, pranayama. So ubhayaksheva purvago gitya bhavaha means a complete absence of any kind of movement of breath. This is what Vyasa says, which is perhaps what happens when you reach dhyana state. Now, one point we have to remember, you know, pranayama, dharana, dhyana, samadhi, all these are closely related. Dharana, dhyana and samadhi, these three are sometimes taken together called samyama. But pranayama itself in its fourth state, highest state, takes you to a state of meditation or dhyana. Of course, you know, when I use the word meditation, I need to explain. Meditation as we normally use in the ordinary context, where I meditated. Meditate 2 hours, I go to yoga studio and they teach meditation. That is fine, wonderful, we should not discourage. That is a very wonderful exercise. But that's not exactly what Patanjali means by the word dhyana. It is a much higher state. But that practice may help us, no doubt, to reach the real state of dhyana. So often, we should not and we cannot criticize Hatha Yoga, yogic postures or practice of yogic exercises, because they are helpful if anyone practices the yogic postures along with some prayer and meditative exercises. It will certainly be very helpful in stress control, and also it may help you to reduce strain, fatigue. All these are very helpful, practices. But when we use the word pranayama, dhyana, especially these two words in Patanjali's context, these words have got much higher connotation, implications in Patanjali's system than what we normally mean by these two terms in the ordinary yogic context. That's an interesting point to remember. But they certainly will help us. Any practice of yogic postures will help us, no doubt, because it will help us to be able to sit for a longer time without much strain. That's true. So, there are different views in this context. So, after this, we will have interaction, so you can ask questions. So what is the meaning of this, what is called akshepi? The word is used in this sutra. You find bahya abhendra vishaya akshepi. So akshepi, according to the particular Sanskrit word, according to Vyasa's comment, Vyasa Bhashya, means transcending. That is, with the long practice of this third type of pranayama, that we already discussed, dirgha sukshma, that pranayama, one is able to transcend, go beyond the internal and external pranayama, which is the highest type. Because in ordinary practice, when you try to suspend breath after inhaling without the breath coming out, it's called antakumbhaka, internal, or after exhaling without breathing again. Okay. Now, the point is, in all days, there is always a time limit. You practice this as a means. You cannot do this for a very long time. There is always a clearly structured, well-defined path given by the masters. Especially time unit is called matras, which more or less are the same, but there are minor variations according to different schools of thought. So, after practicing inhalation and then suspension of breath, and after practicing exhalation, then suspension of breath, both are called pranayama, you have to change one after another. You cannot continue for a very long time. But when you go beyond these variations, when you transcend these two pranayamas, rejaga and puraga, external and internal, then you reach a level of a higher type of spontaneous and automatic pranayama, where it becomes natural to you. This is the fourth one, and this is Vyasa's interpretation. Now you can see this in Sri Ramakrishna's life, or any great spiritual teachers, because also many of you may have read Sri Ramakrishna's life. When many of you must have read, when Sri Ramakrishna's teacher, who taught him Advaita Sadhana, the practice of non-dualism, gave him the Upadesha Vakya, Tattvamasi, means the Mahavakya. Immediately, what he heard from his guru became an experience to him. So he entered into samadhi. So the reason is, he was already practicing various spiritual sadhanas, spiritual practices, right from his birth. So he had reached the peak of different schools of spiritual practices. So, what we call samadhi, or the fourth kumbhaka, was part of his experience which he reached through so many different various schools of religious practices. So when the teacher told him, teacher gave him the instruction, that instruction became an immediate experience to him. The instruction is Tattvamasi, means you are the Brahman, you are the Atman. The all-pervading one supreme reality is yourself, not this physical body. People may ask question, does it mean I am God or you are God? No, this question will arise only when we will look upon it as a mere word. But those who have reached the highest level of spiritual practice have already reached this level of fourth kumbhaka, fourth pranayama, where you completely identify yourself with what you are meditating upon, contemplating upon. It is no more a subject meditating on object. Rather, the subject-object distinction vanishes, they merge into one. So those who have reached that level, a single word is enough. It is called in the Vedantic terminology, it is called, you know, sabda parokshavada. Those who reach the highest level of spiritual fitness, a single word, a single instruction immediately becomes an experience. to those who are already familiar with it. So suppose you are driving every day from here to Sunnyvale, let us say, every day morning and evening. And somebody asks you how to go reach Sunnyvale. And somebody tells you, well, on the way there is that building or this road or whatever, maybe. Immediately you can visualize from your mind. If somebody explains to you the road from here to Sunnyvale, whatever the explanation immediately becomes a matter of your experience, because every day you're driving up and down. Similarly, Sri Ramakrishna was practicing this highest concentration, the highest meditation, which is associated with the fourth pranayama, chaturtha pranayama. So immediately it became a matter of experience to him. So that's why, according to Yoga Sudhakara, it's a famous work by Sadashivendra Saraswati, the fourth pranayama is a state of complete regulation of breath that simultaneously happens automatically and naturally in the higher samadhi. What you hear is not a word, but an experience that you experience within yourself. That's the highest state of pranayama. So we'll discuss some other important details related to this in the next session. Now you can have interaction maybe for about 10 minutes. We have time. So those of you who are interested, you need not limit your discussion to what we discussed today. You can have a general discussion.
So I had a quick question. So the fourth pranayama, is that called Kevala Kumbhaka?
Kevala Kumbhaka is the third one.
Okay. Third one.
It cannot be even called Kumbhaka in that sense. What happens in samadhi, we can call it Kumbhaka in the sense that breath is not shaking. It is like water that is confined in a pot. In that sense, it can be called Kumbhaka. But it cannot be called Kumbhaka in the sense the word is used in the other three pranayamas. All the three previous states are also called Kumbhaka in Patanjali system. In Patanjali system, there is no Rechaga and Puraga as we understand these terms in the context of Hatha Yoga. According to Patanjali, only Kumbhaka is pranayama, right. Nothing else. So if you have no question to discuss, we'll...
So in the Yoga Sutras, there are no techniques given. Like it's mostly the philosophy and more more concise understanding of what the whole yoga is. But was Patanjali's assumption that most of the techniques are going to be covered by Hatha Yoga, Pradipika, or something parallel? Because
yes,
how would people know how to get to this?
Patanjali's Yoga Sutras precede Hatha Yoga and Gheranda Samhita by several centuries. So Patanjali devotes only one sutra. Of all the 195 sutras, only one sutra is devoted to a definition of asana, they call it Sthira Sukham Asana. There also he doesn't describe various postures as explained in the Gheranda Samhita or Hatha Yoga Pratipika. Right. He refers asana only as a means for you to sit steady for a long time in a very comfortable, effortless manner, that is thairyam and saukhyam, steadiness for a long time and also effortless in a pleasant, comfortable manner, so that you can do pranayama, because pranayama cannot be and should not be practiced unless one is able to sit for a long time in a very steady and relaxed manner. Because if there is no steadiness, then the flow of energy, the flow of prana will not be proper, it may go to the wrong nadis and all that. And then if some people, as I mentioned last time, they practice meditation and pranayama with bulging muscles, means a lot of effort, like gymnastics, a lot of effort is involved in keeping the posture steady. If they do that, after practicing for some time, you had to call 911 before doing that, because you'd be so fatigued, so tired, so exhausted. If somebody tells, I have done a lot of pranayama, so I'm tired, it means he was not doing it properly. So saukhyam is an important element in Patanjali system. Saukhyam means it should be very comfortable, relaxed, easy manner. It should be a pleasant experience and not something strained which creates fatigue. So if you are bent, if you are not steady, and if it's not done for a long time, then also you cannot do. And then if it is strained exercise, it could make you fatigued or tired or exhausted. I want to tell you an important point. Patanjali never discourages these practices. So remember, you should remember, the authors of Hatha Yoga Pratipika and Gheranta Samhita, they were not the originators of these various postures. These postures must have been practiced by many great Vedantic Hindu teachers and innumerable Buddhist teachers. Because Yogacara system, which is all Vijnanavada, is a subjective idealism, most of the great philosophers of Yogacara system is an important school of Buddhist idealism, like Shunyavada, were practitioners of Hatha Yoga. And some of the commentators on Patanjali system have been Buddhists. So these yogic postures must have been practiced by innumerable people for several centuries, long, long before Hatha Yoga Pratipika or Gheranda Samhita came to be written. But Patanjali doesn't take those postures into consideration in the sutra literature, where only one out of 195 sutra is devoted to asana. That's all. These asanas are helpful. They are necessary. Without that kind of that sort of physical exercise, you will not be able to sit for a long time in a comfortable mood. Say, gymnast may be able to sit with great effort for a long time, but he'll be tired. So when you sit, your body should not be complaining. The purpose is to go beyond the body. One should not feel that one has a body. You should not feel you have a body. Body should, for all practical purposes, be transcended. Then only one can really practice pranayama properly. In other physical exercises, there may be sthairya, means for a long time in steady posture. There is no saukhyam, there is no comfort. So without that kind of relaxation and total effortlessness, that's an important prayatna uparama, that's what Vyasa says. Prayatna uparama means you should be completely able to go beyond, you should be able to withdraw yourself completely from any kind of effort. Total absence of effort is an important characteristic of true asana. It's called asana siddhi. It's called, okay.
Can I ask one more question about pranayama?
Okay.
So the last question was, how can stopping of breath help in control of prana?
Yeah.
Like, I know you said the breath is connected with prana.
Yeah.
And that is the most gross and most visible manifestation. But how can stopping of breath result in that?
Though Patanjali, though according to Patanjali's system, only stopping of breath or suspension of breath, of the movement of breath or kumbhaka alone can be called pranayama, still you should understand that without practicing regulated inhaling and exhaling, one will not be able to practice this pranayama. This stopping of breath can never be practiced without regulated exercise of inhaling, exhaling for a long time. But Patanjali doesn't mean refer to that in this particular context. It's a sutra literature. So, now the point is, breathing is related to our moods and temperament. As I mentioned, when you get angry, the breathing system loses its harmony. It becomes irregular. When you become very unhappy, then also you start breathing in a very irregular mode. On the other hand, if you observe yourself, you're sitting without a thought or anything, your breathing is very regular. So it means our mood has something to do with breathing. And as I said, breath is the grossest dimension of energy or prana. So, by controlling the movement of breath, we'll be able to acquire the ability to sit quiet and concentrate on one object to begin with, external object, and gradually concentrating on the Atman within at a later stage. So, regulation of breath is the beginning, it is the alphabet, it's like ABCD in reaching a higher and higher level of mental tranquility. But when we look upon breath, we should not look upon it as mere air assets. If you concentrate on the movement of the breath when you practice it, then mind also gets involved. But if you do it as a breathing exercise, then mind may not get fully involved. For example, when you are excited or when you are angry or some other means, if you go and sit some time and breathe in a regulated way, at least your expression of excitement will be reduced. So this is just a very, very ordinary, very gross example you can find. So that's why this breathing exercise should be accompanied with a great concentration of the mind on the movement of the breath. It is not purely a physical exercise. Mind is so deeply involved. And when mind is involved, then naturally, if it is done properly by a true seeker and a great teacher, then it automatically calms down the mind. And a mind that is calm can think of higher things. So, but generally they insist that you should practice certain disciplines, food habits, people whom you associate with, what you read, what ideas you try to feed your mind with. All these are important. If you take a strong coffee or strong liquor and do pranayama, after some time you feel restlessness because the pranayama generates heat and energy and that expresses itself in the form of restlessness. Because you get excited. And it could also lead to people in yogic centers, there are the people who talk for a long time in a very disconnected manner without any particular topic, because the excitement, energy generated expresses itself in so many different ways. So that happened, that shows what breath can do to your character. So the way you breathe, in a way, shows your character. So character and breath are interrelated. For great yogis, it's different. I'm talking about the ordinary people. So those of you who have not listened to the previous session, you can listen, then many of these subjects will make more sense, I mean, become more intelligible what I discussed today. So thank you. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Tat Sat.